And casting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
You're listening to FX Guide's podcast. Hi, I'm Mike Seymour. So look, we've been really looking forward to this one. This is a roundtable over Smoke. Now, Smoke 7 came out not long ago. And so rather than just do a review of it, John Montgomery sits down and does kind of a roundtable thing with a couple of the operators that and artists that have been on Smoke in beta for months. So the Smoke editing stuff they've been doing is absolutely 100% production work, and they've been using it in earnest. And he'll be talking to Patrick from Evil Twin Productions and Andy from Spontaneous. So they discuss things that they like, stuff to do with the new Gap effects, soft import. That's really interesting. And then John swings round to Montreal to talk to Stefan. Now, Stefan is the Autodesk product architect, if you like, of Smoke. And what John and Stefan discuss is the XML workflow. So Final Cut Pro can now export XML, and that whole XML workflow into Smoke, I think, is fascinating. I've been really looking forward to hearing about this. I think XML is huge and will become even more so, effectively replacing EDLs. And so Stefan outlines in quite a lot of detail the XML stuff and hints at the other things that they were looking at with the current releases of Smoke. Over to you in Chicago, John.
Thanks, Mike. So we're joined right now by Annie Milkus and Patrick Hausler, two Smoke editors. So let's start by finding out a little bit about each of you. Andy, let's begin with you.
Thank you very much, John. I'm Andy Milkus. I'm the director of visual effects for Spontaneous, which is a design and effects company in New York. Most of our work is commercials, with the occasional music video and labor of love design project thrown in.
And Patrick?
Hi. Thanks for having me, John. I'm Patrick Hausler, and I'm out at Evil Twin Productions in Los Angeles. And we do mostly promos for the record industry. We do some color grading for independent films, and we're starting to get more into visual effects.
So you guys have both these guys have, obviously Smoke came out probably a month ago now, but these guys have been living with the new version of Smoke throughout the beta process. Andy, why don't we start with you? What would you say is your favorite new feature in Smoke 7?
I think, without a doubt, it's got to be the Gap effects, the new feature they've added to the timeline that allows you to apply any of the timeline soft effects to the clips below is the best way to describe it. It's very similar to an adjustment layer in Photoshop. And it's the one feature this time around that has completely really revolutionized the way that I work. If you've got a spot and it's all conformed and it's all ready to go, and there's a last-minute color correction that needs to be applied to 8 shots, you just add another layer to your timeline, add a little gap effect on top of those shots, apply your color correction, there you go. And you can compound these things. So you could add a color correction and a slight drift or push-in over all those shots. And they behave like any other clip in the timeline, so you can dissolve a color correction in, or really anything like that. So it's just really. Oh, go ahead.
Well, so were you kind of surprised by this when you kind of sat down with the software and kind of discovered that this was your favorite new feature?
Well, I was surprised that honestly that it worked as well as it did. It's really not that revolutionary in terms of. A concept. I could have gotten there with 4 or 5 or 8 separate steps, but this just all of the back office stuff that has to happen for something like a gap effect to work just happens, and that's a tremendous time saver.
So, Patrick, what about you? I'm sure you're a fan of gap effects as well, but apart from that, what would you consider to be the top things that were added in the software?
It'd be a toss-up between the Cleaner Excel integration and the new clip history in Smoke. The Cleaner Excel integration really shortened our approvals process as far as the time that it took to create a stream. streamable QuickTime to go up on our website, or, you know, our clients are more and more requesting DVDs for approval, and the DVD encoding process has been way sped up by just being able to simply export, you know, through the export image module in Smoke and select the appropriate profile, whether it's a, you know, our, have a profile set up for our web QuickTimes and a separate profile set up for our DVD video profile, and all I have to do is, you know, go into image export after selecting a clip, select the profile I want, send it off to Backburner, and Cleaner launches on the server computer and encodes it in the background, and I'm just left with a really well encoded DVD video file, or, you know, virtually any type of, you know, Windows Media or QuickTime or just about any format you can think of.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to get that old SGI albatross of QuickTime. What is it? QuickTime version 4 or 3 or something like that. It's like you have either the photo JPEG, animation, or none codecs. And
yeah,
by the way,
yeah.
No more than 2 gigabytes, by the way. But
And the old way made it really difficult to export video files of any, you know, of any significant length. I mean, if you're only doing promos, it's not that big of a deal, but if you wanted to make a DVD of a, you know, a feature film, it was really difficult to find a way of doing that aside from image sequences that, you know, wouldn't conflict with your DVD encoding software. So now you've completely cut out that stuff.
Yes, and especially if you had a Linux machine, you were pretty much left high and dry and definitely only relying on image sequences to get stuff out and having to rely on QuickTime Pro or After Effects or something like that to put your stuff together. I used the Flint HD system, and the Cleaner XL was a godsend. Have you found it to be really fast?
Yeah, I'm also running on a pretty fast server computer, but before we were using Cleaner to encode our DVD videos, we were using a TMPG encoder on that same computer, and Cleaner, I mean, I haven't actually taken a stopwatch, but it seems like it's a lot faster. And it also, it cuts out a couple of steps, you know, in the encoding process, because I don't have to export an image sequence or a QuickTime or, you know, something out of Smoke and then encode it again in another encoder. All I do is export it, you know, to Cleaner from Smoke, and that's, you know, one step from Smoke to Cleaner.
It's interesting that something like that is, I think, going to be so popular, but it's something that as editors and effects artists, it's like you have to rely on every day. You're continually doing stuff, especially ad agency business of doing client approvals and so forth, and it really does make it easier. I thought initially that the limitation of a certain number of presets or anything might be problematic, but it seems to really fill the need quite well, I think.
I've also found we've only implemented it sparingly. It was early in the beta process that we started really playing around with the Cleaner export. And one of the things we've found, especially on the agency side, is that our clients are getting more and more savvy. They'll offline on Final Cut, and then at the touch of a button, they can make a QuickTime movie that can be posted on the web for approval. And it has in the past been a little, I guess for the lack of a different word, embarrassing, that we have to go through a three-step process that involves two people on four platforms to get something posted for approval.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
so,
I think it was
a really
great addition. Now, the other big one that you mentioned, Patrick, was clip history, and those of us in the effects land using Flame and Inferno and Flint have had that for a while, but definitely something new in Smoke, and I'm a big fan of the concept behind clip history, the idea that, you know, you can always keep track of the setups and such that were used. How are you guys finding it in daily use?
I'm liking it a lot because we have, well, I'm sure like everyone has clients that like to call and make, you know, sometimes what we consider frivolous changes to really difficult shots sometimes. You know, you might have a DVE that was like, you know, 20 or 30 layers, and before you would have to go in and load that setup and change your DVE, and then any other processing that you did downstream, you would have to replicate all those steps, and it took a lot of organization to keep track of everything that you did to that clip. Well, now all you have to do is, you know, that you go to that clip in your timeline and then change to the history view, and you see it, this tree opens up showing you every step along the way that it took to create that final clip. And you can go back to any of those, with some limitations, you can go back to almost any of those steps, double-click on it, make your changes, exit out of that whatever particular module you were in. It re-renders that, and then it also re-renders all the downstream steps, and you end up with a finished clip.
Yeah, I really like that. The interesting thing, and I think Annie, you mentioned it though, is that I'd almost call it the batch tree. The tree is a little, it's kind of a teasing or mocking almost in what you can do compared to batch.
Yeah, I'm one of those dual user flame and smoke guys, and I kind of equate it to the first taste, you know, that you get when you see that tree in smoke. But it has been compared to what we have over on the effects side. But from a project management or even a facilities management standpoint, we have five systems: staff artists, and then, you know, a corral of freelancers who come in. And to not have to leave, you know, a handwritten document filled out in triplicate of every step that was taken to get from point A to point Q has really just been invaluable, because really we'll have someone who doesn't even work in our facility on a daily basis have to come in and make changes. And to just see the thought process really saves a lot of time and a lot of just the hunting and pecking to try to find the bits and bobs that got you, you know, to where you have to go. I just can't wait to see where they take it. You know, again, I sometimes kind of joke, you know, when I'm asked what feature would you like to see most in smoke, my usual answer has been flame, but so far no one from Discreet has responded to that email.
Right, exactly.
But I'm curious to see really where they take it. It is a major, major leap forward, and I'm a big fan.
Now, one thing that's interesting about that, and dealing with multi-res and multi-res clips in a timeline, I guess is something you're already familiar with, but in a timeline, it's a little more obvious. In a clip with history, a final result clip could potentially have multiple resolution, extremely high resolution clips with it, low resolution clips with it. It actually leads to some pitfalls when archiving, which can kind of have kind of caught people off guard, I think. How are you guys dealing with archiving this multi-res stuff? Because clips have a tendency to travel along with that result clip now.
One job at a time. We've been doing it. One of my, I've been, you know, very pleased with the additions that have come along since version 6, and since multi-res made its way over to smoke. But I think one of the shared community criticisms has been that it's wonderful that we have these new features. However, they have created some rather significant logistical challenges for all of us. I think, you know, for the time being, what we've done is kind of taken a lower-tech approach to archiving our multi-res. It is based off of a link that I found on fxguide.com. Thank you guys very much. Of doing file archives and backing them up to DVD. But what we found is if we do have a clip in the timeline, or in this case, you know, something with history that has multi-res, we've either been forced to create a copy of the timeline and unlink everything that's multi-res, which does create some additional steps.
Right.
But it does get the job archived. I mean, as opposed to, you know, being left with a 30, 40, 50, 100 gig file, you know, that needs to be backed up somewhere. I'm curious, again, to see what happens next. Now that we've been given this great feature of multi-res, can we really take more advantage of it?
Right. Yeah, but I will say that without a doubt, I'll take the advantages of multi-res. I'll take the advantage of clip history and so forth anytime on a daily basis, because it really does open up the workflow. In fact, I will, not that I'm a deleting setups and deleting clips type person willy-nilly, but I've actually been saved already on several occasions by having clip history invoked where I can get back to a setup that maybe I accidentally saved over or something when working. Quite frankly, it was the number one request, at least on the effects side, for them to add into the software, and I think that the seeing in the editing products is a really nice addition for sure. So a couple of the other new features, motion time warp. We've in the effects side again, they had the motion estimation node in batch. Did it work? Occasionally it did, but the new motion estimation algorithms that are used in the time warps in Flame and Fire are really much better. Have you guys used that much?
I've been using it a lot, actually.
I've been using it just about every day. I think last week, I've been just blown away by the results. Like sometimes, just like with any other, with the original motion estimation time warp node in batch, depending on the shot, you can get some mixed results. But I did a shot, I think it was last week. It was inside a football stadium. The camera was on the field level, and it was the camera was zoomed in way high in the sky with the backdrop of the fans and the stands, the football in perfect spiral coming down and landing in a receiver's hands, and the camera zooms back to track the ball the whole way. I was able to slow that down considerably with the new motion estimation time warp, and it worked flawlessly. And by contrast, we had used it up in an older version of Inferno, and it was kind of a warbly, bubbly mess.
Right.
So I'm a big fan. I mean, the algorithm is much, much better.
Right.
But unfortunately, there's no way to adjust it. There are no little green arrows to move back and forth. Not that that was a perfect interface either.
No. But it certainly definitely gave you the opportunity to make changes if you need to, and actually made that node actually usable in batch. Because without it, I'm not sure it would have been as usable, or even at times usable at all. Honestly, I think what would be interesting also to see in that motion estimation. I don't know if you guys have played with Twixter or any other products, but the idea of also being able to provide hints to the software on what an edge is, because a lot of time you get that kind of catch up or boiling on the edges between frames, and you know, if you could draw a spline and track that on the edge of a guy's arm or something to kind of help the software determine what object is what, I think that would be a great addition as well. Patrick, how have you found the time warp in the work that you've done?
I like it a lot, but I come from an Avid Symphony background where we had this thing called Fluid Motion, which was similar. The algorithm, I don't think, was quite as good, but you did have masking tools to help you out. If they, like, let's say a really bright light goes through the shot or something, that'll usually warp it for you. So that would be my only criticism of it, is that there's no, you know, real masking tools to help it out when something weird happens in the frame.
Yeah, back to the hand painting or the masking by hand in the DVE or so forth between multiple clips, I guess.
One thing I have found with the new motion time warp is it's surprisingly good on field-based material. If you have something that was shot on video and every frame is interlaced, as long as the metadata for that clip says that clip is field one based, and you do render the motion time warp in interlaced mode, it's remarkably good, because that has always been a challenge.
Yeah, that's actually a really good tip.
Major there.
Yeah, that's a really good tip, actually, and that caught, I think, several people in the beta process, was this idea of initially everyone, probably about everyone on beta, maybe thought that the motion estimation was terrible on field-based material until you realized that you actually did have to follow the guidelines of that metadata flag. One of those cases where you really do need to follow that. I don't know, a lot of the time I'll force stuff to progressive most of the time in working, but that's a good tip, Andy, actually. Another addition, soft text in the timeline, and kind of also taking anti-aliasing samples up to 11 or 64, I guess it would be, which is also a really nice addition. How have you found the soft text?
I found it, one of the things I found early on was that it's actually much, much faster using soft text in the timeline than either rendering text on the desktop and using it to superimpose a slate or a title, legal super, sometimes two or three times faster.
Yeah, I'm curious if they did any kind of optimization or something like that versus processing every frame, but maybe treat it a little more intelligently or something like that in the timeline. I don't know, but I definitely feel that.
Even the desktop text module has, and of course, the name of the button is escaping me right now. I think it's pre-process or something like that. Whereas, you know, if your text isn't changing, it's almost like it caches that one frame or something like that and goes by pretty quick. But, you know, the speed improvement is wonderful. I think trying to cram all of the buttons in the text module into an area, you know, 32 pixels high or whatever it is, makes for a challenging interface, but you can't enter the full text module right from the soft effect, just like you can enter the full color corrector or any of the other Axis soft effects. I do remember during the beta cycle, there was a lot of debate, question and answer, back and forth. How much of the interface do we try to put, you know, on the edit desk, on the desktop? But the compromise is definitely there.
It's really good, I think, in Smoke that all the improvements, or many of the improvements, seem to be going into, you know, the timeline compositing area, and so that you can stick to your timeline and not take stuff in the DVE. Patrick, are you finding yourself sticking more in the timeline more and more now versus using the multi-layer DVE and such?
Not so much yet. Not for anything where I've had more than maybe three or four layers, because my only issue with timeline compositing so far is how fidgety Smoke has been about, like, if you make any, you know, you make some change to a clip, maybe two clips down, and then all of a sudden your effects unrender on you. And I've had a bit of that, so it's made me a little bit leery about doing too much compositing in the timeline. So I'm still, in a lot of ways, I'm still stuck in the DV.
I'm very glad you brought that up, Patrick. That has to be my biggest criticism so far of the timeline interface is things that unrender are extremely finicky. You could drop a clip in on some other layer somewhere else, and something else in another layer will be seemingly unrendered, and you don't know why. And it's just a little odd.
Yeah, it seems as though that's the kind of stuff that you don't need to be worrying about as a user. You certainly don't need that kind of getting in your way of doing your work, kind of additional level of stuff to have to worry about. I was hoping that maybe some of the burn background rendering stuff could maybe help in dealing with that. Have you guys used much burn in Smoke?
It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful, provided you plan for it, or I shouldn't say plan for it, but wrap your head around it, you know, of what burn is. Definitely evaluate it before you buy, because it's wonderful to be able to send some timeline stuff out to render so you can keep working. But I find the tendency when I'm working in the timeline, when I have clients in the room, is they want to make a change, we need to render something, and then look at that change. And you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it, of course, as it updates, but sometimes the impression with timeline burn is if you feel that your rendering in the timeline is a little sluggish, this is going to help.
Right.
You know, not necessarily. It depends on how you plan for it. I mean, it's a major step, a major improvement over when we can only render or send timelines to burn, excuse me, from the library. So it's definitely a major improvement. But I know I've definitely had artists who've, including myself, you know, who have, in the process of building your timeline with the client in the room, it can get a little layer heavy. Burn, while it's a great tool, is not a direct substitute for a faster workstation when it comes to timeline rendering.
Yeah, I would say with regards to batch on the effects side, I love it, especially when working with HD material. There's stuff that I do in batch, set up my titles, send it off to render, load up another batch setup, work on that, send it in the background. But that's a much, much different beast than trying to manage multiple layers and timeline, I would imagine.
It's perfect. It's wonderful for versioning. If you're working on a spot, and then there's going to be 25 different, either 800 numbers or something like that, burn is wonderful.
So we'll just close out here. If you guys, putting you on the spot a bit, but maybe your number one tip or trick about using the new software that you think might be most helpful for users who are just now installing the new version of Smoke and Fire?
Well, definitely, there was a bit of a debate on the Discrete forums. I think it was either last week or the week before about the new clip history and whether people need to save setups anymore. like when they're working in DV, and I strongly caution people not to neglect saving their setups and giving them coherent names. Just because from experience I've had a couple of goofy and intermittent problems with it, that if I hadn't saved the setup, I would have been completely screwed on a couple of shots. So don't completely rely on it.
Yeah, that does work both ways. As I mentioned, the alert time of actually deleting a setup file and being saved by history, it certainly does work the other way. And Andy, what about you?
I'm just kind of reminiscing from all of the disasters that I've had about setups and things. And I do remember when it was first posited that, you'll never have to save a setup again. All the setups will be archived to your Digibeta. And, how many times have those in the past, had trouble opening?
Right.
I think what I would suggest to any either new user or someone just installing the software is, now that we do have things like multi-res and metadata and clip history, is to be aware that since these features are available to you, you need to be consciously aware of them.
Mm-hmm.
We've all been bitten, not harshly, but bitten by the, like you said, the progressive or frame one bug. And I don't mean bug in terms of programming. Sorry, that was a very poor choice of words.
Right.
And the same thing with multi-res. Be aware when you're going, since you can work with any resolution, any combination of bit depths, you need to be aware when you're working of what you're doing now that these options are available to you.
That's especially true in dealing with how clips are also tracked along in clip history. I mean, you have the potential of quickly filling up your frame store if you're not careful, because you might have some source clips hidden inside another clip with history. You might have that 5,000 frame Avid work picture or something like that that you thought you deleted but is actually part of your master now.
But I think as far as my favorite little tip there, other than, gap effects are wonderful, is my favorite use for soft import with Smoke has been things like slates and legal supers, things that get changed every 4 minutes.
Right.
And we have the luxury of where I work most of the time having an assistant work with the client to set slates and legal supers and things like that. And then as long as they burn over or overwrite those same files on the server, wow, everything's magically updated. Big fan there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the same holds true for even doing design work or something like that, whether you're outputting something from Illustrator or After Effects, because, most of us are probably using multiple tools, not just sticking exclusively all the time with Smoke. And it actually, at least as a first start in playing nice with other file systems and other apps, I think. Well, thanks a lot for your time, you guys. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and give people some insight into the new versions of Smoke and Fire.
No problem.
Thank you very much, John.
And we'll see you in the next round of beta, I guess.
Great.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks for that, John. Nothing beats hearing it from people that are using software every day in their natural workflow, so that's really interesting. One thing that's of great interest to a lot of editors, obviously, offline and online, is the growth of XML and the use of XML as a way of transferring data between different applications and different equipment manufacturers, for that matter. And John Montgomery now turns to Montreal to talk to Stefan at what was Discrete, now Autodesk Media and Entertainment.
Joining us now on the line from Montreal is Stefan Dapri from Autodesk. And Stefan is the product designer for Fire and Smoke, as well as Backdraft Conform. So Stefan, we just got done talking about some of the new features in Smoke 7.0 and Fire 7.0. Another new feature, which has actually been around since version 6.7, is Final Cut Pro XML support. Now, it seems as though XML is kind of the latest buzzword in the industry. What the hell is XML?
Well, XML, in fact, is an ASCII-based file format. So it's just like, you know, an HTML file. It's an ASCII file that contains, in fact, tags, and it's formatted. So that way you can put any type of data there. So there's a big buzz around XML because some websites are using it to store data. Some television programming, in fact, may contain in the ancillary data XML data. And in fact, we just need to look at XML as a plain text file that is formatted. And that can be understood by some applications. So there's nothing magic there. It's ASCII, just like today, an EDL is ASCII file that you can read and even create. So no magic there. It's not a new AF or OMF as a new interchange format, except that it's a formatted file format that can be read with tags, like I said, and somebody who can understand the tag concept and also the structure can, in fact, use the data to do something else with.
Okay, so you have this text XML document with tags and values of what those tags mean, kind of unlike a action setup or DB setup, which is a text file, but you really don't have a clear, readable way of knowing what those things are within that file. You kind of have to figure that out on your own. But now you can have these tags, but you still need to know what the tags mean. So what Apple did is publish a spec, which is the Final Cut Pro XML interchange format. And so what happens is if you see something that says value min in your Final Cut Pro XML file, you can look up in this document and see the structure of what that word value min means.
That's why we call the feature, in fact, Final Cut Pro XML, because as you understand, any manufacturer of any kind of application could export something as XML. If you take today at Autodesk, we have Cleaner, who in fact creates its import-export profile as XML file, but of course, those XML are far from what you can find today from a Final Cut Pro, and of course, they wouldn't be able to understand those files without doing some work to understand, in fact, the syntax and the grammar, right? It's like learning a new language, so you need to learn how to use the words to create something out of it. It's not because you can read XML that you can understand, you know, all the applications. So it's formatted. So that's the main idea behind the thing. The good thing is it's open and human readable, so you can read it, understand the structure, just like I said, an EDL or even a text file today.
Okay, so it's not a magic file format, but what it is, it's just a very descriptive
it's
file.
It's not magic, but of course you may imagine that it's going to ease a lot inter-exchange between applications of different type, because since you can read it, and manufacturers supporting XML give to their client, or the one who will read the files, a grammar, and that way you can say that this tag represents such data, and then it tells you how to use this data. But on the client side, you need to do some work to understand this grammar and reapply correctly this metadata to something relevant to the application.
Okay.
Like we've done, in fact, with Apple.
Right. So I guess that pretty much can understand the answer to my next question, which is why would you export an XML versus an EDL in Final Cut?
That's a good question. So today, of course, when we're doing a project in Final Cut Pro, rarely you're going to see, in fact, only a one-layer clip with two other tracks, like the standard EDL we got, you know, 10, 15 years ago for finishing. Now, at the offline stage, people, you know, and they have all the tools to do that. They create multi-layer clip to create multiple layers of facts, work more the audio, so then you can have a 16 audio track clip with dissolve, with gain comment, and so on. So today, exporting EDL from Final Cut Pro to finish in any application that is finishing could be challenging because you need to export an EDL that is a one video track and four other track standard. You would need to export maybe 16, 15 EDLs in the case of a very complex timeline. And of course, if the offline editor didn't correctly identify the EDL in which order they go, well, the finishing artists need to do it, need to find which layer goes after which one and so on. So that's very difficult, in fact. And sometimes EDL contains, of course, only some data about the effect. So we have dissolve, you have wipe, you have linear time warp, but as we know, projects now are more and more complex than the simple EDL. And that's why when Apple approached us 1 year and a half ago, saying, well, you know, Final Cut Pro 4.1 will export more than EDL, it's going to export a complete timeline, so 100% data of the timeline will be exported as XML. So we said, well, that's a very interesting for our clients, because we're seeing more and more projects done in Final Cut coming to Smoke. And then, instead of having to manage 15 EDLs, well, I'm just going to take one file. And the bonus is, well, I'm not only managing the EDL data, I'm working with the full timeline data. So on my side, on the Smoke side, we said, okay, so let's see, according again to the grammar of the XML, what are the effects we could support. And then we did the work to see to remap, in fact, those effects in Final Cut and bring that into the Smoke universe.
And so within Smoke, what you end up getting is essentially a multi-layer timeline with some of the clip metadata, but not really any of the effects, at least in this version 1.0 release. Basically, what you get when you bring the Final Cut is a structure, correct?
Good question. So I'm just going to recap a bit what we're doing with the XML, in fact. So what we translate from the XML is all the timeline structure. So like I said earlier, all the video tracks, all the audio tracks, the patching information, all the EDL information like date name, source time code, marker, there are cue marks, in fact, in Smoke. So we can put data there that can be translated into a cue mark in Smoke. Dissolve, wipe. So of course in Final Cut there are some wipes that we don't have, and also in Smoke we have more wipe than they have in some cases. So we're matching the wipe corresponding based on the SMPT standard. Filter wise, so filter are in fact are their soft effects or segment effects per se. We in version 6.7, where we introduced a feature, we started by we wanted to go very simple. The idea was with the first implementation was, well, let's bring, in fact, all, as much data as we can, EDL-wise, and in a second phase, we're going to add more FX data. So in this version, the only filter we support is, in fact, the time remap, the time warp, in fact, because as you know, in every project you're getting today, well, you have time warp. And they can be linear, but they can also be animated. And when you conform a project from, let's say, an Avid, it's always tricky to conform those time warp because you don't have this data into an EDL. So you need to do eye matching. And when you have, you know, a very well animated speed ramp, well, you're doing eye matching. And that's, you know, very time consuming. So the first effect we kind of cut our teeth on was, in fact, the time remap, and with keyframe, meaning that from Final Cut Pro today, if you bring in XML that contains multiple time warp shot animated in time, no problem, you're going to be able to confirm that perfectly in Smoke. So we're looking for future releases of Smoke to add more FX data. You talked about color corrector. Of course, when you work in Final Cut Pro, you will work in YCBCR color space, and we're working in RGB. So yes, at this level, the color information would be, in fact, meaningless because we're not working in the same color space, but also we may not be working with the same material. So maybe somebody would have used DV material for their offline, and they're going to finish maybe with Digibit or even HDCam material. So again, the color space would be different. So what we're looking at supporting, like, effects are more, in fact, the animation, let's say, of surface, like XYZ positioning, scaling, rotation, that today you need to redo when you conform the project. So as far as color, corrector, keying information, all this data, that is very, in fact, more a guide in Final Cut Pro, and that's something you're going to, in fact, redo when you're going to go to Smoke, because the data there would be irrelevant. So we could spend a lot of time to remap all the parameters, so transferring the color information, but at the end, the finishing artist working in Smoke would probably just ditch out those effects and redo them because he's the guy who's going to finish the project. So that's, in fact, the plan we have.
Right, okay. If there's a color corrector in the Final Cut Pro timeline, the flag comes across.
Absolutely.
But there is actually no value associated with the color corrector.
No, because we validated that with many clients, and, in fact, the feedback we had was, okay, it would be interesting maybe to get the basic parameters, like, let's say, somebody just turn off the saturation to get a black and white look. Well, that data could be translated, and that could be useful. If somebody started to do kind of heavy color corrector with many parameters and doing animation over time, well, again, not the same color space, not the same video levels, and at the end, you may, in fact, just trash the effect and start from scratch. So we validated that with many clients in many markets, and in fact, they were more looking for, in fact, the parameters about positioning. So all the picture-in-picture kind of effects are, in fact, something that you don't want to spend too much time to redo, because anyway, if you crop an image and you animated that in time, so maybe this data... This it does very often is what the client approved, and that's what you want to see back in the finishing without having to spend, you know, 3 hours to redo that kind of effects. So some effects will translate, some effects in fact will be in fact just replaced by an NMT soft effect.
Well, it would be nice in if and when in the future version some of that position data and scaling data gets transferred across. And you're right, it doesn't make sense to translate stuff that won't translate effectively from one product to the other. One of the things that's becoming really prevalent in the industry is a data-centric workflow where we're dealing with files off external file systems to assemble spots from color correctors. What type of thing this came up on one of the Smoke user groups recently? What kind of support do you have for dealing with image sequences in Final Cut? Is this in fact supported?
In the current release, it's not possible. We, in fact, concentrated on what is more common, and that's the tape slash timecode workflow that is used by a lot of people. But I totally agree. More and more, we are seeing this data-centric workflow coming, and people working with TIFF file, JPEG files, and then finishing with those high-resolution file later on at the finishing stage. So the current version don't support that, but like I said earlier, all the data is part of the XML. So that's on our side, in fact, the work to support all the path and the file name. For the first implementation that we've done with version Smoke and FAR 6.7, we define a subset of feature that we're going to support. Sadly, we cannot do all the features in one release, but in fact, XML is not a one-release feature. It's a multi-release plan that we have for, and we're going to add more and more feature in the future releases with XML, making the conform process easier for users, and then you can concentrate, in fact, on not importing files or finding the files, but on the creative side of the conforming definition.
Well, while you may not have had enough time put in all the features you wanted, I just want to say that this new release of Smoke and Fire is really quite amazing with all the stuff that's in there. And in talking to a lot of the users, they're actually very, very happy with it.
Thanks. We got good feedback. We were at IBC last week, and I was in London showing, in fact, version 7 to current Smoke and Fire users, and they were very happy with what they've seen. So, yes, the XML thing is a good thing, clip history and things that, I mean, the idea is we talk very often with users to make sure we are well connected with the industry, to make sure that the feature requests asked 3 years ago still make sense. So, because as we know, the workflow changed, the requirement changed very rapidly. So, and again, using Smoke News, Fire News to get in touch every day with the users is key, in fact, on our side. Of course, when we created the Smoke 7 project, it was I think twice the size of the current release. So we had a lot of ideas and things we wanted to do, but of course, yeah, you needed to finish this project. Like in fact a production or a movie, right? You need to deliver this for a date, and we had to reduce. But yes, we have tons of ideas that make, you know, life easier and makes your day of work more fun, in fact. That's the goal.
Again, we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and let us know about the new XML feature.
Great.
Well, that was really, really interesting. Thanks for that, Stefan. Actually, I'd be really interested in hearing people that might want to hear more about XML. I know it's something that's of great interest to me right now. Just click on the Contact Us link on the website. So on behalf of Jeff Husa, John Montgomery, and myself, I want to say thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX Podcast. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2005 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide LLC.